kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a bunch of games to talk about tonight. A lot of good stuff coming up. We're starting off. Tim Ekibis, you're here. How are you doing?
Good. Man, I like how you're that positive thinking that it's going to be a lot of good stuff that's being talked about on this show.
I would hope so.
Well, you always hope, but you never know.
Gotta be optimistic.
Yeah. The power of positivity, man.
Pretty much.
I've heard that somewhere.
I don't remember where. It was this thing way long ago. Back in the day, when we were children.
Actually, you know what? I might have made it up just now.
So how are you doing?
Good. Again, still good.
Still good? Anything fun that you did this weekend?
Well, it was fucking video games happening, man. Freaking got Dragon Quest XI and Spider-Man dropped into my house last week last Friday. But between those two... I was also playing a bunch more of The Messenger.
Ooh, look at you trying to segue things already. I'm trying to make pleasantries and conversation, and you're like, hey, fuck you, we're getting right to this.
I'm just trying to say, no, man. I mean, that it was a good weekend. My kid was off of the grandparents. I got to play, like, Dragon Quest for a solid, like, 4 hours uninterrupted, and then...
I want your opinion on something with Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
The music.
Yeah.
Like, it is, I usually love Dragon Quest games and their music. I'm having a hard time playing it because of the music.
I'm not having a hard time because of it, but it definitely feels like a notch down from any other Dragon Quest game I can think of, really. I mean, I guess this one most readily compares to Dragon Quest VIII, which is, you know, like the top of the line for the series. But yeah, it's just like the music... Something about it just isn't hitting for me. Like, I think the battle music is okay, but like the overworld music is just like, nah. I don't. It's
the cheap, shitty MIDI quality of it is just killing me.
Yeah. I guess that's part of what it is. It's just like more that than the composition itself. I don't know.
Theme, the orchestrated title theme, is incredible. Gorgeous.
That sounds beautiful.
The rest of it, Jesus, what were they thinking?
Yeah, it's not a pleasant, as pleasant an oral experience as, you know, what I expect from Dragon Quest. It's like, yeah. But, you know, it looks good. It's fun. I'm having a good time with it. Other than that, yeah. I'm enjoying it. I'm definitely enjoying it. Just like crazy, just like that. And like Spider-Man so far is freaking incredible. That game.
I didn't get a chance to dive into that one yet. I'm hoping to do it this week sometime.
Yeah. And just both of those in the same week. Of course, there's not really, I don't know how many more big AAA games I'm really looking forward to the rest of the fall other than like Smash Brothers, like 3 months away, but.
Not looking forward to Tomb Raider this week?
I am, but I haven't bought those when I wait for price drops on the Tomb Raider games, but boy, I really loved Rise, but I can wait. On that one.
Smash, though. Oh, man. I cannot wait for Smash.
Yeah, I think I spent a combined, like, $20 on Tomb Raider 1 and Rise of the Tomb Raider.
That's how to do it, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
save them pennies.
Yeah, some games I have no problem waiting on. Others, Spider-Man was kind of a spontaneous, like, okay, I have my $20 Best Buy reward certificate. It's been a hellacious week. Fuck it. I'm going in. $30 for Spider-Man week one. And of course, Dragon Quest, I'm not going to wait on because I'm a huge Dragon Quest fan.
Yeah. I went from not getting Dragon Quest at all to like a spontaneous fuck it, I'm going with the collector edition.
Oh, wow. That's an expensive one, if I recall.
Yeah, $150.
Yeah, even I didn't do that.
And Best Buy Gamer Club to help out.
No, I did my outrageous limited edition expenditure of the year, and I think I mentioned this on the show like a few months ago, is I got the European collector's edition of Ni No Kuni 2,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be the best one, like the North American one. Like, you seem to have been able to, I've seen that like on sale for like cheap, but the European version, that one is worth a few more bits than what I paid for it.
I think I saw the American one on sale, the one place, for like $100, and I was this close to jumping on it. And then I realized I don't like that collector's edition. It's just not very impressive.
No, I don't like the little diorama thing. Just like the European the European version. There's a reason I got that one. I mean, like the music box it came with is kind of chintzy, but it has this big, gorgeous art book. And a vinyl, not that I have anything to play vinyl on, but I have it. that art book though, it's gorgeous. I mean, that thing, that's like a $30-$40 art book. Easy. Damn. Easy piece. Yeah. And I got, I have the Wizard edition of Ni No Kuni, so it felt appropriate to go balls out on this one as well.
Yeah, you gotta go balls out.
And that Wizard edition of Ni No Kuni 1, that is also very expensive.
Ain't cheap.
No, like just like there's like a book with it that is a replica of the book that's in the game. Like that alone will fetch like what it cost me out of pocket, if not more. It's insane.
It's crazy. It's crazy how some collector's editions keep their value and 90% of them anymore just like go clearance after 2 months.
Yeah, that's why I usually don't get them anymore unless it's like a really special game like Persona. I got the $100 edition of Breath of the Wild, which I definitely don't regret at all because that's my Switch case is the case that came with that. I'm trying to look at some other stuff here. I have like a collector's edition of The Witcher 1, which came with a bust of Geralt, but I remember getting that for like $15. That was
holy
not
shit detail.
oh yeah I can't really see what else is up there on my shelf. It's like off to the left of my computer station, so it's really hard for me to get an angle. I'm trying to think what I don't know.
I'm trying so hard to curb my collector's editions. I have way too much shit in my house. I don't need them.
Yeah, no, that's like I'm in that same, or I was in that boat. Like I came to that realization a long time ago, whereas you kept going. It's just like I get pre-order bonuses. I get some special editions like that Fallout 3 one with the lunchbox. That's still the lunchbox and the bobblehead. That's still a pretty great collector's edition.
Yeah, it is.
But you know, I just have all this stuff and I'm not doing anything with it. Like I just find like this garbage pre-order garbage. I'm just like, what the, come on. Like all I'm really looking for out of a special edition is like a nice case, you know, a steelbook case.
Yes. Yes.
With a soundtrack. And maybe like a little art book. Like that's basically what I want. Like I want that soundtrack and like a little bit of art to look at, some behind the scenes stuff maybe. But that's it. That's why I really like a lot of like the whoever does the Etrian Odyssey games. They always have nice little sets with the usually pretty much includes a soundtrack standard. And same with like Atlas. Those are both Atlas. Jesus Christ. Gee, what do these two things have in common? I really like Atlas's kind of like, and they usually sell theirs at retail, if not like maybe just like $10 more. So
yeah,
it's reasonable to get the stuff that I really want. Like when it comes to your statues and Infinity Stones and whatever bullshit comes with the Darksiders 3 one, I'm like, nah, no, I don't need
which
that.
Which Darksiders 3 one, the normal one or like the stupid expensive one?
Yes,
that comes with like the four statues for each of the four horsemen. Oh my lord, that's ridiculous. Too much even for me, and I love collecting
and that
dumb
series
shit like
doesn't
that.
Really seem to have that level of like, I mean, of clout. I think, like, you know, Darksiders 1 everyone really liked. Darksiders 2 people were kind of like, why did you do a prequel when everyone was hyped for a sequel? And then it kind of died, and now Darksiders 3 is coming back. When they announced it, people were like, oh cool, more Darksiders. It wasn't like a oh my god, blah, you know. Like once you're getting over $200, once you get over like $150, I don't know what you're doing. Like,
yeah,
gotta be like real hyper super fan ridiculous territory for that.
I just want more people to do just normal steelbook editions. Give me a steelbook, give me a soundtrack, give me a season pass, make it $100
sure.
And I'm there.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
Like Tomb Raider, like, that's what they're doing.
Or like discount the season pass for the limited edition, huh? You know, make it a little sweeter.
Nice. That would be nice for sure.
Yeah.
Like, Ni No Kuni, they did the $80 one that came with the steel book and, like, a tiny art book. Like, that's perfect. I was fine settling for that one. I wish Spider-Man did the same thing, like, a mid-tier edition that just had a steel book and, like, maybe a soundtrack, some tiny shit in there. I didn't... Like, the steel book is gorgeous in the Spider-Man collector edition. I couldn't justify dropping that much on it. And then I saw the box for it, and it's pretty tiny for the price they were asking.
Weird. I don't think I saw anyone else there, but yeah, picking it up. Line of people picking up Spider-Man on Friday. Anyway,
we should probably talk games, huh?
Yeah. Or the game. The game of the moment.
The game. You were here to talk about one game that is called The Messenger, developed by Sabotage, published by Devolver Digital, released August 30th on Switch and PC for $19.99. Mm-hmm. As a demon army besieges his village, a young ninja ventures through a cursed world to deliver a scroll paramount to his clan's survival. What begins as a classic action platformer soon unravels into an expansive time-traveling adventure full of thrills, surprises, and humor. Tim, what is The Messenger? Because I've been hearing a lot of hype for this one.
Well, my first note for The Messenger is it's just The Messenger hyphen is so goddamn good. I'm glad I'm like a lot of the. I'm fortunate that I went into this game kind of blind. Like, I saw the early clips for it and I was like, yes, that one, put it in front of me, please. That would be great. So like some of the stuff you alluded to of like the unraveling into a time traveling adventure, I was oblivious to. So I got to discover a lot of what this game had to offer on my own, which was a lot of fun, and really cool. And if you don't know anything about this game and you're just like wondering, is it good? Yeah, it's good. You can just go buy it. Just don't listen to the rest of this, cause I'll go into some more detail as to why it's so damn good. But, going in blind was kind of cool. So yeah, it starts off, is a pretty straightforward retro action platformer. It's very Ninja Gaiden. It has candles on the wall, which yes, people associate with Castlevania, but also was a thing in Ninja Gaiden. People seem to forget that. You're slashing things on the walls to collect your currency and health and whatnot. Very early on, you get the ability to cling the walls, much like you would in Ninja Gaiden. You can throw shurikens. That's the only kind of like magic ninja power you get, but you get a couple other things. You get like a little glide, you get a grappling hook that shoots out straight horizontally so it can cling to walls and to enemies. And kind of the central mechanic in that they're adding to this formula is if you jump and you slash an enemy or you slash like one of the candelabra things in the background. You jump, you slash it, and then you can jump again.
Ooh.
But then if you jump and then you slash and then you jump and then you slash something, you can jump again. And you can just keep doing this on into infinity. And it works on, like I said, enemies, the background object. It works on enemy projectiles as well. And when you like grapple onto enemies, like you'll grapple onto them, slash them, and then you can jump. So I tell you, I cannot wait to see fucking speed runs of this game because it's going to be bananas.
I can only imagine.
And the game starts you off like it starts off really straightforward. It's really linear for like the first couple hours. You're just going through stage by stage by stage, getting a feel for the mechanics. And like, yeah, they push you here and there to be like, okay, here's some challenges where you're going to need to do a bunch of jumps and slashes and jumps and slashes and really exploit this mechanic a bunch to kind of get some extra stuff here off to the side, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or to get over the spiky gap, you need to use your grappling hook. Because when you use your grappling hook, you get a bunch of momentum off the other side. And I'm guessing a lot of the speed mechanics are going to involve using that grappling hook a shitload. But yeah, then as you mentioned, you kind of get to, you know, I'm getting toward, you're taking this message to the mountain on the other side of your island. It's like, okay. And so like, I'm getting to the mountain. I'm like, this game was okay. Like, it was a fun little ninja romp, but that is kind of like seemed like the first act of the game, basically, because once you get there, that is when the game opens up into the aforementioned time traveling adventure thing, because you kind of complete your quest and then the quest becomes larger and then you end up having to go. And I kind of like I think a seasoned gamer such as myself, and I'm sure all of you listening, would play through those levels and see parts where you're like, I feel like I should be able to get through there. I feel like there's more rooms here. I feel like there's more to do, but I just can't do it yet. And yeah, the thing that you end up being able to do is flop back and forth in time. So you you played through all these levels kind of in the past, like the first four or five levels or whatever, in the past. Now you're going back to those levels 500 years later, and there's different paths opening up. There's different things you can access, and there's like little time warp things. So you can go back and forth in time to get like around these levels into different spots, because now you're trying, you have a different objective, I guess I'll say. To leave it vague in that sense. But basically, the long and short of it is the game starts out as this linear like action platformer and becomes like evolves into more of a Metroidvania style thing once you really hit the meat of it. And it's fucking great. Like, I was enjoying it, and then like I kind of got into that stuff and I was just like, oh my God. Like, any moment I had to pick up my Switch over the weekend, like, it was just so fun and so cool. And then, you know, at that point, like, you, they know you have all these abilities, so you really, they give you room for all this stuff to breathe with the gliding and the zipping around and the double jump slashing and et cetera, et cetera. And you feel comfortable with these mechanics. Like, you know, even I'm not a speedrunner man, and like, I'm zipping around these levels. It's just like so much fun to move around in these games and explore in this game, I should say, and explore. Few minor beefs. Once the game does open up, it feels like I wish the fast travel was a bit more expansive. Like, it's very limited in where it lets you go, kind of by design, but there was definitely some moments where I'm just like, I end up going a long way down one path and I'm like, shit, I need to be in the past or the future or something to get through here. But the nearest time portal is like way back whence I came. I wish I could just fast travel between these two, like, you know, shop rooms back up there. And in the context of the story and like how the world is, there's really no good reason why you shouldn't be able to do that. No. I think it could use maybe like a smidge more enemy variety. That's like a really nitpicky. Your upgrade tree kind of, I felt like it ran out really fast. Maybe just because I was good at collecting currency and I was able to buy them all relatively quickly, but I definitely hit like a long stretch where I'm just like, man, I don't really have anything to buy in here. Okay. What a bummer.
That's a bummer in games. I know Kingdoms of Amalur, which we're both excited, was in the news recently. Like, well, I max leveled on that before I completed the game.
I was excited for you. I didn't care about the game.
Yeah, I went kind of crazy on the last episode about that, but I max leveled before I even beat the game. Right. And you kind of get to that point where you're like, why? What's the point of killing enemies when there's nothing you can do, or there's, you know, in your case, nothing you can buy?
I mean, there was still like some stuff. It was just really expensive, so it wasn't coming like as quickly. It was like definitely a long ways before I could buy something. But then like once you hit a certain point, then some more upgrades unlock. But then I quickly bought those and I'm just like, could have been spaced out a little better.
Picking
the nits here. The game also has a kind of a neat little death penalty. So when you die, you have a contract with this little demon guy who brings you back to life, and he hangs around you for a little bit just stealing your money to pay for the convenience of bringing you back to life. So that's just like a cool contextual way of, you know, giving you a small penalty. It doesn't rock you too bad. And you also get like, that dude has a lot of lines of dialogue for when you die, and he gives you a taunt for your troubles. The writing throughout this game is pretty good and, you know, really goofy. It can be exhausting, I guess, for some people. It can wear a little thin, just like a lot of indie games have a very similar fourth wall breaking, this is a video game, we're going to comment on the tropes of video games, sense of humor. Like Guacamelee 2, which I literally just reviewed a couple weeks ago, kind of the same thing. But it's really good. Still, again, they hit it pretty well with between the death quips and a lot of just like the dialogue with the shopkeeper are really good. Like the game, the art, the pixel art looks great. There is two when you travel through time, there is a significant difference, I guess, between the future and the past. And that's all I'll say about it. But they definitely put a lot of work into making like the art look good and the characters animate well. The music is fucking great. Surprise. I guess I should say that my homie Daniel Cannon did do music for one of their promo things, but I didn't know that till the game was already out. So I don't know. There's not really any bias to throw at it there. It's just like I was really looking forward to this game, and playing it at first, I was kind of like, all right, it's okay. But then like once it opens up, I'm just like, yeah, this game really delivered on its promise and is really awesome and definitely absolutely 120,000% worth people's time and money.
Nice. So minor nitpicks aside, your official verdict for $20.
Oh, buy it. You should have bought it already. What are you doing? But yeah,
well, for the people who were still listening and decided
those
to hear
still
the
listening,
whole thing.
Those still uninsighted, like, yeah, this is a fantastic Switch game. Unless you really, and it's only on Switch and PC right now. Unless you really abhor, you know, retro style platformers, that's the only reason I could think of to avoid it. But I mean, I guess even if you're burnt out on them, maybe a little bit, if you're like a little bit wary, because that is indie games tend to hit that style a lot now, just like as a stylistic choice, like it's still very good. Like it belongs in kind of the upper pantheon of retro throwback games.
So it deserves all the praise it's been getting.
Yes, I throw my praise upon the praise pile. it is worthy.
Sounds good. Tim, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting with me.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts, final words?
Hey, but I'm just saying, so I love this game. I highly recommend this game. But if you don't like it, don't take it out on me. I'm just the messenger.
Oh, God damn you. All right, moving on. We are bringing in our good friend, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, though I'd be doing better if it weren't for my body changing in ways I do not prefer.
Well, when you reach a certain age, your body starts going through some changes, and you're going to start finding women attractive.
That is true, but you know what else happens?
What happens?
It rejects endless shrimp. It rejects endless shrimp. My nephew's birthday.
How many did you eat?
I never even count anymore. It's at that point now where back in the day, the logic was, I'm going to eat my money's worth out of this plate. You know, $15 is going to make them work for me. And then you eat. and then you're like, I had like 20 plates. Beat that hot shot. Now I'm at the phase where it's like, okay, this platter is 1,000 calories. And I'm getting all of those in one round of endless shrimp. So how bad is this going to be for me? Then you're like slowly eating, and you figure that by trying to take your time, you're still getting your money's worth because you're there for longer, even though you didn't eat as much. And then, like in this particular case, my nephew's birthday just passed, and I was like, hey, you know, it's your birthday. Let's celebrate. I'll take you out to what do you want to eat? Hoping he'd come up with something interesting. He's like, red light. And the shrimp's going, I was like, damn it. Yeah, endless shrimp. Let's go get that crap. Show up. What do you want, sir? Endless shrimp.
Bring it on.
Bring all the pain, and I'm eating it. And maybe it was all the sodium that is obviously riddled with, the stuff is riddled with, but I walked out of there with a freaking headache, the likes of which I haven't had in a while. And it's like throbbing. It's like my brain is just, like I told you, it was like my brain detached from the inside of my skull, and it's just rolling around up there like a hamster in a ball. I can't make it stop, and it aches. But also, video games are fun. For those who are listening, including yourself, if you had interest in Yoku's Island Express, that weird platform pinball game, GameStop recently cleared, not clearance up, but they marked them all down to used, and now they're all $20. So nice. I ended up grabbing that yesterday. That was a nice highlight to the weekend.
That's an awesome game.
So you played it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's really good. I'm glad to hear that it does pound, but the curiosity said, I want this. I want to see what this is all about, but I also couldn't justify $40 for the physical when it's selling online for like 10 or 15, like for the digital.
I want to say it was 25.
Well, for the digital?
Yeah.
Well, that wouldn't be so bad. It's still a bit of a markup, but at least physical, I can kind of get it. But at 20, I was a no-brainer. It's like, shoot, see what it's all about. Maybe I could be talking up as a game of the year sort of thing if it's as good as people have been saying.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable. I don't know about game of the year, but it's really enjoyable.
I will find out. Straight yoking. How about you? How have you been?
I went down to Mag Labs for the weekend. I watched Viking Guitar melt my face off with shreddage and rockage. So that was fun.
I am so envious that I wanted to go to Mag Labs this weekend. Could not do it. The timing was terrible.
What'd you end up doing?
I do a podcast called Rhythm and Pixels, and we did a collaborative panel with another one called the VG Embassy. And it was accepted at a con in retro called Retro World Expo. It's held in Hartford, Connecticut. So for me, it's about a 5-hour drive, maybe more or less. So we shot up there for the weekend, hung out with the guys up there from the podcast, and just kind of saw what they had to offer, did the panel. I prevented myself from buying games, and I did manage to see games that I own being sold in the vendor booth for a crap ton of money. Shocking me. But also making me smile because I have games that are worth a lot of money.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Magic Knight Rare, Odyssey. Surprisingly, A Witch's Tale on the DS was selling for $95. I got that game for $10 because I was curious about it, and they were clearancing it at GameStop because no one was buying it. They had it for $95.
Jesus.
Of course, there's staples like the Valkyrie Profile, which I'm amazed is still worth money. And it's just, there's a lot. It's like, I feel like if I just went with my game list and just started looking through vendor booths, and that was the entire thing I did at a con, was like look through the vendor booths, find games I own, and write their prices down. I think I'd come out with some surprising knowledge here. Like, whoa, I have a pretty expensive, valuable collection here. Who wants to buy my Magic Knight Rare for $500? Please come take it. I love the game, but I also love $500. Come take that shit.
Want to know something funny with the Witch's Tale?
Sure.
GameStop has it in stock right now for $25 used.
Seriously?
Yep.
Man, I feel bad for the guy who just paid $95 for it if it's sold. Because as you know well, the collector's market is two halves of a coin. The first half, of course, is value pricing. And the second half, the most important half, is who the fuck's going to buy it? Because...
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder, I see these crazy prices, these guys, because someone out there is creating the value for these products. Someone had to sit down and say that Magic Knight Rare is worth $400 to $500. But is someone buying it for that much, or does someone just kind of strike a number, and then other people saw the number, price there is the same, and no one's copies are moving?
Probably.
I genuinely question that, which is also kind of why it's interesting to see, oh man, this game is worth how much? My Shining Wisdom is worth $150. That's crazy. People were making fun of that game in 1998. But now it's a question of if I want to sell it, who the fuck's going to buy it from me? Yeah, I'm not interested. But I like the fact that I can see that your copy exists for a value, but I'm not buying it. I just want to look at it. Like, yeah, well, that's nice for you. Someone buy it.
Well, it looks like some Magic Knight Ray Earth sold on eBay for $400. So yeah, it looks like that's the going price.
So someone did buy it for that?
Yep.
Shit. eBay probably took a nice chunk of that. But at the same time, if I can get some under the table dealings, like, hey man, how about you take this win? I'll cancel the auction and we'll work behind the table. I ain't trying to give them a cut of my profits. I need that money. My kids need to go to college.
Do you have kids?
Yes. Their one's 32 and he's ready for college. It's a struggle out here, man.
Oh, man. Speaking of games that are worth a lot of money, should we talk about the games you're covering that aren't worth a lot of money?
Sure. Yeah, you said today, but that digital license could be worth something later.
It could. I mean, they're two $10 indies, so they could be worth, I don't know, $10 someday.
That is true. Possibly $9.99.
Indeed. Let's start things off with Mini Metro, developed and published by Radial Games. It released August 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Take on the task of designing the subway layout for a rapidly expanding city. Draw routes between stations to connect them with subway lines. Eventually, your network will fail. Stations will open too quickly. Commuters will crowd the platforms. How long the city keeps moving is up to you. Pernell, how long did you keep the city moving?
I don't know, because I got lost in the flow of it all. Mini Metro is pretty cool. I saw it in the shop, as you know, and I was immediately kind of like, oh, I like the idea behind this. I want to try this. And thankfully, they were nice enough to pass us along a copy. And I feel as though this is one of those games where seeing it in the store, I didn't know if I wanted to drop money on it. But now that I've played it, I feel like if I could take this information back to my former self, I would have bought this. It's a pretty cool game.
What are you doing?
So it always it starts out simple every time. It starts out with a small map and some shapes. The shapes represent train stations. So let's say you have a square, a triangle, and a circle. On the square, you might see a tiny triangle show up. What that tiny triangle indicates is that there is a person at that station who wants to get transferred to Triangle Station or Triangle City. So you take a line. Hello?
I'm still here.
Okay, yeah, me worried for a second. All right. So you take a line and you connect the square station to the triangle station. And right then and there, a train starts to move, carrying the passenger from point A to point B. Then you might see circle station with a square guy wanting to go to square station. You do the same thing. You can either create a new line if you have access to one, or you can extend the line you've already got. And that's the game. You would think that was simple, but they screw with you. Because you ever play one of those games where it starts out small, but then it kind of pans out, but it's done so gradually that you don't notice it's happening. It just kind of does.
Yeah.
This game does that well. It starts out with those three stations or two stations, and you're making them all connect, and you watch your little machine move and manipulate and send people back and forth. And next thing you know, you're trying to connect like 25 stations with all these different people in them. And what ends up happening is, there are certain constraints that eventually start popping up that you notice. So, for example, early on, you typically start with access to one or two lines. Think of a subway map like, well, New York City or Chicago. Like, you have the red line, the blue line, whatever. That same concept applies here. You might start with a red line and a green line. So you can only make those two routes. But after every certain – it's like a clock that appears in the corner, like a time clock. And after every cycle of a day – or through a week, rather, the game will say, hey, welcome to the next week. Here are some rewards. And it might offer you a new train, which means you can make another train run along an existing line. It'll offer you something like a carriage, which is a larger train, like a connected train, so you can transport more people between stations. You can sometimes get an additional line to produce. So you can have, like, now you can have an orange line if you want to put an orange line down. Sometimes it will give you access to more tunnels. Tunnels are what you need in order to send your subway under a river if a river pops up on your map. And another things like that. Like, it's typically those kinds of bonuses. And the intent is to make you – sometimes it makes you choose which one you want. So you might have to say, hey, I can get another train. I can get another line entirely, or I can put a new train on an existing line. But you can only have one or the other. And they make you choose. And it gets rough. And – to lay it out for you, the way the game ends is when one train station gets overloaded and you leave the people at the station for too much time. Once that happens, a little circle will start to appear around the station. And once it fills in, game freaking over. And it tells you how long you lasted and how many passengers you were able to transport on your makeshift subway system. It starts out very zen-like. The music is very calming and soothing, and you just are sitting there drawing lines with the cursor. You can do it with your finger too, but that's where the stylus comes. You might want a stylus for that mess. but otherwise, you can do it with your finger. You can use the Joy-Cons and move it around. But you start out as nice and simple. You really can't go wrong. You're just watching your nice, cool Metro system operate. It kind of provides you with that feeling that you would get back when you played the old school Sim City, and you would watch the tiny cars drive along the roads as you made larger towns. That's the vibe and the feel I get from this. I like watching the trains going packed, tossing the people back and forth. But then once the shit happens, fucking forget it. You're panicking. You're trying to put a line over a river, but you're out of tunnels. So you got to use a train line that's already on this side of the river. And then you're trying to mitigate losses. You delete a line by mistake and you're crying the blues. It gets crazy. And when the game is over and it does the tally, there's like a story mode of sorts. And what it does, it gives you access to like real cities. And sort of their real life metro lines, like, because the trains aren't already built, but I believe it's probably creating the new train stations to try to mimic kind of how the original city was or is. So, like, you might have New York, and the goal is to make a train line that goes between New Jersey into New York City and then around like some of the boroughs and keep it running. So it's almost like saying, hey, New York, your charting system sucks. I come here and I'm always frustrated. Well, here you go. See if you can do better, chump, because you're in it. They give you New York. And if you transport a certain number of people on a certain stage, you'll unlock other stages. So you go anywhere from like, it's like there's like U.S. cities, there's Beijing, there's Tokyo. There's a lot of stages in this game. They're all the same in play style. But again, SimCity was like that. You just get a different land mass. It was like, okay, make this area work as a city. Give you the same, they give you the same set of tools, but a different environment and say, make this work. And that's enough. It's a lot of fun to do. And there's like a few different modes. There's like an endless mode if you just want to kind of do it and have it just grow out as far as it can until you eventually fail. And there's, of course, the stages that I mentioned earlier, which is the mode I pretty much stuck with because there's enough levels that you'll be doing. You could do it for a little while. It's just a good game. I like it very much. I want more games like it. It's like I'm thinking about this. This is like create your own subway system. Now I want a game where it's like make your own bus line. Make your own apartment. Come up with an apartment. So like, just make a bunch of games where the goal is to do better city planning.
Than what's normally there.
Exactly. Give me real life environments and say, make this crap work. I will. And then I'm going to take my Switch to the city hall and say, look here, buddy. You see this map? You see this? I put a subway system in this city and you haven't done it yet. Here's the blueprint. I want my money. Pay me.
Well, as it stands, $10 on Mini Metro. What do you think of it?
I think it's actually worth the money. It's a good little puzzler. And like I said, if you're the type that likes taking a system and kind of playing with it and making it work to your whims, like a simple system and making it work, this game offers that to you. And I think there's enough train lines here to give you a bit of time and fun.
Nice. Good stuff. Next game to talk about is called Chicky Chicky Boxy Racers, which is an incredible name, developed by Pocket, published by Sony's Untized Labels. This one also released August 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Here comes a party racing game that's tons of fun. Drift like a pro with easy analog stick controls. The intuitive party battle mode offers fun for everyone. Play wherever you are, anytime. Purnell, how is Chicky Chicky Boxy Racers?
It's cheeky, cheeky, wacky fun. it's a simple game. I'm gonna put that out immediately. It is a game where, let me think, if you were to remember like games like the old Micro Machines game or the old Penny Racers games from back in the day, this game feels a lot like that. The idea is that you can select between a number of cars. I think there's like 20 cars or so in the game, but it starts out with like maybe 5 or so. And they have each car has stats and speed, a jump, acceleration, handling, and drifting. And the idea is you pick these simple little cars, I mean, ranging from anything from like a compact car to a rally sports car to like a limousine and a family van. But all these like real type cars, but they're all in box miniature forms. And then you select if you do the race mode anyway, you select from one of three regions, the city, the jungle, or the beach. Each of those atmospheres have 4 tracks. And if you beat all of those tracks, you unlock the GP, which is all those tracks in sequence, you know, typical like racing game style where you're going for highest score over the course of 4 races.
Mm-hmm.
And each time you win a race, like every time you get within first and third, you unlock the next race up until, of course, the GP is done. But if you get first place on that race, you unlock a new car. So that's pretty much how you unlock the majority of your cars. I'm hoping there's another environment because the only thing I left to do is like 2 races on the beach zone and I'm good. But I'm curious to hope that there's like maybe like a 4th region that opens up if you max out, if you score out, if you do well in all the GPs. But gameplay driving wise is really simple. I didn't even give a crap about the other control mechanic, which is traditional button to accelerate, button to brake, blah, 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 because the control scheme I enjoyed the most was just using the thumbstick. You just push forward and you go forward. Push it back, you hit the brakes, and then left and right kind of feels like if you were playing like Super Off-Road back in the day, where it's like steering based on the direction your car is facing. It's very smooth and fluid. I had no issues with controlling the car. It actually felt very simple to the point where I almost thought that the game was almost a gimme game, like, huh, you can't fail. But then you end up running over like an oil slick, and boom, you do skid out and kind of go backwards, and it's hard to get back on track. So you do want to maintain your car. On each track, there are a few power-ups you might come across. There's like a star, and if you hit the star, you become immune to terrain. So like if you run over an oil puddle after picking up a star, it doesn't hurt you. Think like Mario's invincibility.
Mm.
And then there's like a fireball, where if you pick that up, it maxes out your turbo gauge, and you can press the turbo button and just rock it up the track for a short period of time, like a big boost. And Aside from that and dodging like occasional obstacles on the courses or hitting the occasional jump, that's how racing works. And every race is pretty short. Like you can do 3 laps on a race within like a minute and 40 seconds. Oh, they're very short tracks, but they're very fun tracks. Like they're nice little simple boxy tracks that you kind of get enjoyment out of. And then there's like the 4 little party modes. Like there's like one being like paint mode. I think that was actually my favorite one, is when there's like a flat map and you're driving your car over it. Every time you drive over a spot, you color it in with your car's paint color. If a bomb blows up on that spot, though, it erases all the paint. So you have to crash into the bombs and knock them off the track, drive over paint buckets to spill paint on the ground, and then just generally cover the track. And of course, when there's other drivers on there, well, it gets a little bit manic as you're trying to fight to control the ground and who has the most paint on it. And then there's like a smashy mode where you're knocking each other off of the track, like colliding. There's like a golf mode, sort of like Rocket League, where you're knocking a golf ball and a soccer ball into a goal. And it's just, I enjoy the game. Like it was fun. I wanted it to be bad and it failed.
You want the game to be bad?
Yeah, it's like, because I saw it. It looked simple and cheeky. And I like the name, but I was like, there's no way this game can be fun. It looks real cheap. But then there's like the charm to the cars. And I actually like the music that plays over the tracks, believe it or not. And I honestly enjoy playing the game. Like, it makes me feel weird now because now I'm in a position of, you know, the try it and buy it bit. But it's like it's so simple that it's hard for me to tell who wants it. Like, if you want a racing game where you're not going to really lose any of the races. Like, I had no real trouble winning all the races that I've done. It's just fun to do them, but they're not challenging. And there's not a lot of, like, complications or metrics to strategize in the game. You're just driving your little cool car around a little cool track, sometimes dodging a train, and it's fun.
So it's just simple, fun, enjoyable racing.
Yes, exactly.
Well, then and for $10, what do you think of it?
I think it's definitely a try. And if you feel as though simple is your bag, then it's a buy. It works. It does what it wants to do very well. And if you have friends that just kind of sit around, just kind of putz around in little tiny cars, or drive over a car, a road, and paint it like as if you were playing like that paint roller game, it's good. It's fun. It's concise. It's $10. In fact, I'm going to do something really weird. Well, fuck it. Why not? A $10 fuck it. Why not? I just feel like saying it. But I think it fits that bill in a sense. Like, it's just simple shit. You want a game where you can just have some confused, like a little bit of multiplayer fun, just take a stab at it. You might like it. If anything, at least the charm will probably sell you. It's a good game. A little drivey car man game.
Sounds good. Normally $10 is a bit high for a fuck it, why not? But I'm not going to challenge your decision.
He's like, I'll allow it.
It's you. I can't challenge you. You would probably beat me up.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'd challenge you to cheeky boxy racers.
And you would probably beat me.
That is true. I'm not denying that.
Well, MagFest, we're going to have to throw down.
I can dig that. I'm still trying to figure out how Mag will work, but if I can get down there, I will be bringing the Switch, and I will cheeky down.
Sounds good. Pernell, always good having you on chatting about this kind of stuff. Do you have any final words?
Beware the Shrimp Fest, and don't order the Lobster Mac if they offer it to you, because it's an upsell lie. It's not a part of the original deal, and they'll screw you for it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Moonfall Ultimate, developed by Fish Cow Studio, published by Wales Interactive, released September 4th on Switch, PC, and PS4, September 5th on Xbox One for $12.99. Discover a story of the Empire, a once small kingdom now under threat from so-called savages. They hunt a mysterious element known as Lunarium, which resides in the Empire, and you, a dauntless recruit, must protect the land at the front line. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm sick, thanks to my kids.
Hooray!
Yay!
Yay, children getting people sick.
They've been, actually, so far, once again, he's back in preschool, so my wife and I have been sick every weekend.
Sweet.
God.
Anyway, tell us, what is Moonfall Ultimate?
So, it's this, like, it's pretty much like a 2D fantasy. I don't know if I'd want to call it a brawler, like, because it wants to be part Golden Axe. And do you remember the game Taskmaker? Like way, way back in the day. Probably like, God, like 1993, 1992.
No, I don't.
Okay. It was like this RPG. thing, and like you traveled around the kingdom and like you did all this stuff, and they gave you missions. Like, and this guy like would specifically give you certain missions, aka a task maker.
I get it.
But it's just like, it feels like this game is like this weird mishmash of the two. A Torchlight, I guess, if you want to go with a more modern comparison, I guess. And so you go around and you just do all these different missions, and there's a storyline behind it, which mainly comes from discussions with other people and finding scraps of paper upon like dead bodies and like scrolls and stuff like that. And you just go around and you kill things. It's standard fantasy fare,
yeah.
But in like a 2D format. So, where do I begin with this game?
I was not beginning.
A very good place to start.
Anyway.
That's right. Where else are you going to get Sound of Music references with your video games? The SML podcast, of course.
Anyway, providing a service that nobody asked for.
Literally nobody asked for.
Ever.
Okay, so gameplay, it's clunky. It is super clunky. And honestly, it felt like no matter how much I, like, you know, I leveled up my guy, like, I mean, first off, let me backtrack on this. There's three different classes, and it's all standard RPG stuff. Warrior, mage, like, thief, kind of, like, not... Like, they don't call him a thief because it's not really thief, but, like, you're light on your feet. Like, you can run quickly.
Like the agile guy.
Right. The thief.
What'd you pick?
Oh, I picked the warrior guy. I always pick the warrior guy.
Same. I did the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But on the other hand, if you go with the endless mode, that's a good way to test, like, which one you want to play. And I had more fun with warrior, even though, like... Anyway, but the thing is that it's just, like... the controls they never feel particularly responsive. The guy always moves really slowly. And I've played RPGs where it's just like, oh, well, you're carrying a ton of stuff, so we're going to make you move more slowly. But in this game, it never felt like it. Just like the guy's always walking through molasses. And on top of it, like the art in this game looks beautiful. Like it looks really nice. But then, like, when you're swinging your sword and stuff like that, he does this, like, weird jerky motion. It reminds me of, like, a Flash game from, like, 2006. It just doesn't look right. It almost looks like Jim Henson is behind, like, your guy's movements. Almost like he's, like, a Muppet, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that.
Gameplay is tough as hell, too.
Well, I was playing it on easy, of course. But even then, it was just like, it never seemed like, your hits were always like meeting what they were supposed to. And so like, you're easily getting ambushed by like six or seven guys, like all the time. And, like they quickly take away a bunch of your health. And I found like, it didn't really help to defend myself. Instead, what I ended up doing is like, I started trying to run circles around them until like my health would go back up. And then, like, I could go back in for an attack. And it's just, like, it got tedious really quick.
Yeah, that...
And I just...
I had an experience in the endless mode where the cheapest thing I found in the game is there's a weapon that drains hit points and gives it to you on attacks. And that was the only way I was able to really progress in endless mode, because enemies would just take off tons of health... And even there's a block button in the game, and it felt like it was pointless because it was just, it took too long to get the shield up. And by the time you did, you already got hit twice.
Yeah. I mean, there was that. And of course, you can't move when you're defending yourself either.
Yeah.
Like, and also you can't move while attacking. And it's just like, I don't, like, it just, none of it felt right. And on top of it, you're given these magic powers, which are supposed to help you. But the game's tutorial doesn't ever bring them up, which I was really surprised by. It's just like, hey, you can use these points to get things. And then it, like, it never goes over how to use the your magic powers. And on top of it, like, I was unloading all my XP points into these different powers. And then I'm just like, all right, well, I guess this is going to help me somehow. Like, and then later on, when I'm looking up the controls, I'm just like, wait a second. Oh, this is how I'm supposed to use these? The game doesn't even bring it up. You had to go off and figure out how to do that yourself.
Yeah. It definitely used a bit more direction.
Yeah. I don't know. The music and sound wasn't anything to get excited about. What else? I didn't have a chance to do any co-op, so I can't comment on like how much fun it would be. But at the same time, I didn't have a lot of fun playing it in single player, unfortunately.
Yeah, going back to that endless game I was talking about, there's an achievement for getting like a ridiculous amount of kills in endless mode. The first achievement is at 50, and it takes you like 11 or 12 floors in the endless mode to get anywhere near that. And after a while, just the enemies that they throw at you are such hit point sponges that you'll spend 5 minutes on a single enemy, just hitting them. And again, I was cheesing it with that weapon that drained hit points, so I could take as much damage as they put out and still survive it. But it was just brutally unfair after so long and boring, which it shouldn't be in a hack and slash game. It was just too much.
Yeah, I could see having fun playing like the single player game in like maybe small doses, but the thing is that I feel like only a very small group of people would find it to be a lot of fun. Like at first I was kind of excited with it because it reminded me of Taskmaker, and I was just like, okay, it feels like a retro game. It feels, you know, yeah, it's kind of clunky, whatever, you know, but it's not bad. Like there seems to be an interesting story behind it. But at the same time, the story never really goes anywhere of particular interest, I should say. But it's just like, it also only felt like I could really only play it for like 5-10 minutes at a time before I'd be like, oh, let's see what else is on my 360. Or, yeah, my 360.
Yeah, you're still stuck in those days.
On my Xbox One, you know? It's just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if you remember the days of games like this, you might get some nostalgia out of it, but I can't see today's gamers. I can't see anybody like any of today's gamers getting that excited about it. It's just, and the thing is that it's like the game calls itself Moonfall Ultimate, and it's like, this is supposed to be the Ultimate Edition. And I'm just like, what was it like before this?
I do have one other gripe I wanted to bring up. The AI in this game is incredibly stupid. There are some escort missions that you have to do through the game, and if they die, you fail the mission, which means you have to start the entire mission over, and they will die because they're stupid, and they will get surrounded, and you have to try saving them, but they have very limited health, and it's an uphill battle. And the worst part is when you die, any progress you made in that level, any experience you earned is gone.
Well, that, and also you start all the way back at the beginning of the level.
Yeah.
Like the game has no save points throughout any of the levels, and it's just like
the lost progress is more infuriating than having to start the level over, because if you kept your progress and kept your experience in that level up, it makes the level a bit easier. So if you fail a couple times, you can at least get stronger and make it through. Where if you die, it's just going to be the same story over and over because, you know, dealing with an idiot who gets himself killed all the time, and you're not strong enough to really help out that much.
Right.
I don't know. Overall, though, $13 on this one. What do you think?
No, not for 13. I would do 5. It's just, I'd recommend waiting to get this on sale. It's not that fun. Like, it looks nice, and there's a decent amount of story to it, but that's really what it's got going for it.
What do you think they could do to improve the game?
Oh my God. AI, the combat. Like I could forgive, like I could forgive the animation not being so great. But it's really just like the combat and not feeling like you're like it feels like you're whiffing half the time.
Yeah.
And as you said, like so many of the enemies are just like, you know, they're hit sponges. And there gets to be a point where that's not a fun challenge. It's just tedious and boring. And it's just,
yeah, I'm scared like, to see what the enemies are like on hard.
Oh God, I didn't even bother trying. Like it was just, yeah, there's a lot to improve on the game. And, you know, by all means, if the game creators want to come back and like do a lot of work to the game, I mean, I'd be happy to revisit it for this podcast, but currently this is not a game I'd recommend.
Yeah, sadly, I do have to agree. I hate giving games a deny on the show, but this one, it just didn't feel right. It didn't play right, and I thought it had so much potential. But if they come back and they patch it, they improve it a bit, add maybe some checkpoints to some levels or let you keep your progress if you die on a stage, I think it has potential, but it's just, it's not there.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Jacob, always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts?
I know you discussed the last podcast, but I'm super excited about THQ Nordic with Amalur coming back.
Oh, my God, fucking A, yes.
Oh, man, I was so excited when I saw that post. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So that and Crackdown 3 are pretty much the only games like in the future that I will buy day one.
All right, next game to talk about is called Ninjin Clash of Carrots, developed by Pocket Trap, published by Modus Games, released September 4th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. Ninjin Clash of Carrots is an anime-inspired beat-em-up with a gaggle of varied enemies, deep customization, and ninjas. Play through side-scrolling worlds consisting of multiple stages and collect carrots stolen by the evil Shogun Mo. Checking this one out. Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good as well.
I just remembered that the Shogun's name is Mo.
I was wondering what gave you the giggles.
Yeah, you deal with Mo Jr. more than Mo for a good part of the game, but yes. I'm thinking, okay, was there a Larry and a Curly and I missed it? No.
Oh, boy.
No, there was not.
I know you previewed this a couple episodes ago. We're giving it the full review treatment. How is it?
Yes, it's great. I already felt like I was gushing about it during the preview, and I stand by everything I said and more. I actually started to get a little worried as I played through more of the game. I was worried it was too damn easy. And, you know, take it for what it is. I have a good amount of gaming experience, but in terms of like hours per week, I probably don't put in nearly what I used to, you know.
I know the feeling.
And I'm not starved for choice. I have hundreds of games I have yet to play, and yet they're sitting in my Steam account waiting to happen, you know, whatever. I think that's also a familiar curse ever since, you know, bundling became a big thing. And I have this expectation that a lot of games are going to be harder than I can handle simply because I don't have, you know, rabbit reflexes from 20 years ago. I don't have, you know, that active experience where every week I'm putting in a significant number of hours of gameplay. And so I was starting to get A rank and best rank completions on levels. And so my biggest concern about Ninjin was whether it was too easy. And there, as I recall, and I could be wrong, may want to fact check this post hoc. As I recall, there isn't really like a skill level setting. So you get a rank based on how well you do with each level. And just to sum up the gameplay, you know, you're running left to right and you have these waves of, parts of the Shogunate that show up and try to chop you to bits and you have to get behind them and whack them or whatever your method is. You can also throw shurikens and each shuriken, each weapon has different characteristics or, you know, a couple hundred different things you can do and theoretically thousands of combinations of how you can configure your layout or your outlay, which is awesome, fantastic. And how well you rate when you finish each level is, you know, I'm assuming there's probably a C rank. I saw my kids get a B rank, and there's A rank, there's S rank. I don't know if there are other ranks besides those. And you can go back as a completionist and try to, you know, do better on those levels, get the S rank you were looking for. Yeah. And you're rated on things like your accuracy with the different weapons. You're rated on how much damage you took. You're rated on how many carrots you collect. Carrots being the in-game currency, right? that makes sense. You're a rabbit. So you know, I was getting a lot of A and S rank levels, but then you get to the second boss fight, and you know, if you play at my level, which maybe you will, maybe you'll far surpass me. I don't know. Maybe your experience will be totally different. When you get to that second boss, you're going to get your ass handed to you. So the game does a good job of coming up and correcting you when you start thinking, oh, I got this. Don't worry, I got this. No, you probably don't got this. and the thing is that as you get these different amulets, these different stones, these different weapons, different swords or spears, different shuriken, or even Caltrops, if I'm pronouncing them correctly, you know, you drop them and enemies run into them, and you know, it's like stepping on a Lego, but in feudal Japan.
feudal Japanese Legos.
Anyway, point is, how you configure yourself for each of those levels can make a huge make or break difference in whether or not you're going to, you know, whoop some butt or have butt whooped. And part of it also is that each weapon has some very significantly different characteristics. You know, you've got knife class versus sword class weapons, and the knife weapons are multiple stabs. So since you get measured also by your largest combo, and you rack up combos based on how many hits between each time, the fast weapons obviously can make for a great combo run. Each one has a different critical rate. So there's a lot of strategy just in picking out the gear that you use. So there's a good amount of depth to what's otherwise a fairly simple left to right, beat up the enemies and don't get beaten up too badly type game. Hmm. I think that there's a lot to enjoy about it. And, you can also buy some customizations that are just purely cosmetic a little bit later in the game. You've been collecting these like rainbow carrots and you find out what they're for later. Ultimately, it's to customize your character in more ways, but not in any way that I've at least seen that has an appreciable difference in gameplay, just the look. But it's also a great buddy game, a great two-player game. I still did not get a chance to check it out online. I regret not doing that. I've only done local two-player still. But in my local two-play games, it's kind of nice because you collaborate. You can each track how you do on your carrots, but it all goes into one common pot. You can rack up and buy more stuff. So it's a real kick that way, too.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think just the fact that it has an online aspect gets extra points in my book.
Absolutely. You know, again, I lament that I didn't get an opportunity to try it that way. I definitely think that that's going to be you know, an extra value add if you're not doing two local players. I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of fun even by yourself. Fun dialogue. It's got the wobbly letters like Undertale. I think I mentioned that before. The art style reminded me a lot of Undertale, actually, but more colorful, less spare, but similar, you know. And it's just got a lot of charm to it. So it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a lot of fun to look at and to read. And of course, a hell of a lot of fun to play. And it's very goofy, very tongue in cheek, very quirky stuff. Like one of the boss vehicles, you can see all the markings where it's made out of corrugated cardboard. It has like this end up icons and fragile icons stamped on the sides, and it's hilarious. I the sense of humor is really on point too. It's a kid friendly sense of humor. So you know, like with my kids playing it, I don't think there's anything here that's even remotely inappropriate. It's just good, clean fun.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So I can't.
Go ahead.
No, you please go ahead. I totally cut you off. You're about to ask me the question I needed to be asked. I'm sorry, man.
$15 on it. What do you think? What's your official verdict?
$15. It's worth $15 easy. I don't think you need to wait for a sale on this one to get your money out of it. Again, the gameplay is itself pretty simple. And all of the customization and the ability to play it two-player, as well as just the general enjoyment factor and the ability to go back and score better on certain levels for that completionist factor, or collecting, you know, over 100 different weapons, totally worth it. You know, you'll get your $15 worth.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you got one other game to talk about. That is a preview of an upcoming game called Rapture Rejects. If people are familiar with Cyanide and Happiness, they probably have their eyes on this one. It is developed by Galvanic Games and Explosum Games, published by Tiny Build. It is releasing sometime this year-ish for $19.99. Their words, not mine. The rapture has happened. You didn't make the cut. Rapture Rejects is a top-down, isometric, last-man-standing game set in the apocalyptic Cyanide and Happiness universe. Royal, what is this game?
I think the better question is, what isn't this game? No. Okay, so I'll preface by saying I'm not very good at the Battle Royale format, which is bitterly ironic given my name. not a fan. It just does not click for me. I did my best. I never got a single kill off. I suck at this game so bad, but I do not blame the game for that. I blame me. The art style is awesome and instantly recognizable, and you can emote by using a wheel. Press the V or hold the V key down on the keyboard, and you can pick which emotion you're gonna convey, and they've got all the same faces. And some different dance moves and things that you can do. Where Ninjin was very kid-friendly, this is very much not. Anybody who's familiar with Cyanide and Happiness would not be surprised by that, of course. It's just now it has people yelling most of the things you would otherwise see in print. So, you know, brace yourself for audio. Yeah, as you get in fisticuffs with people in the waiting room while you wait for a world to spawn, you can beat each other senseless and you don't really take any damage or anything. It's just for show, but you know, you'll hear, you know, shit and fuck and all kinds of other fun noises. That's half the entertainment factor for me is just that, you know, the game's very comes from a crass blue universe where sometimes the humor kind of pushes that envelope of good taste a little far. Same kind of thing. And very different take, at least for me, on that sort of battle royale format. Instead of a first person shooter or chase cam shooter, let's try this correctly, it's instead top down isometric. The Q and E keys on the keyboard, I believe, rotate the map 90 degrees for you, which can, you know, be either useful or disorienting depending. Gives you a good way to view perspective on certain things, you know, view around a corner if there's an object waiting on the other side or a person. You can choose whether to run or run fast. When you run fast, you send out sound, which, you know, makes it more obvious where you are. Because part of your success in this is probably not being seen until you absolutely have to be. And using the mouse, of course, to aim in any one of the different directions, got a bit of a tracing line to show where your shot should land. You've got some reload time, and you've got different objects in the environment with which you can interact. Treasure chests that take you a couple seconds to open. You got to hold down the F key to get them open. And there's also these satellites that give you a slightly wider view of the world around you. All the weapons are kind of these makeshift weapons that you can pick up, which are kind of fun. I like the CD launcher. Still didn't get a kill off with it either, but I thought it was pretty cool. You get garbage ammo for it to reload it, presumably CDs. You know, different close and far range weapons of various inventiveness. And yeah, it's a cheeky, fun, if a little crass game. Definitely was fun, even though I suck at it. Like I said, I don't blame the game. I blame me. I felt like there was a bit of a shot lag, but then that just sounds like me copping out, saying, you know, making some excuse for why I'm not very good at it, right? Yeah. So it's okay for me to admit that I'm just not good at these games.
Still believe in you.
Oh, heart.
But even sucking at the game, is it fun?
Yes, it is fun. And I imagine it'd be a lot more fun if you, you know, you're well engaged in this sort of genre. If you, get familiar with the game, you get familiar with the weapons, you know, maybe you would enjoy it that much more. But like I said, it is still a blast to go and discover. and no soundtrack to speak of, which is probably good simply because you want to be able to hear enemies coming. But that's like the only thing that I found kind of unfun about it is I heard only sound effects the whole time, and I kind of thought this would be neat with a soundtrack. Maybe superfluous, I don't know. It just in terms of like world discovery, art style, and the action when it happens is really frantic. The game made me laugh out loud more than once. I think my favorite laugh is the blunderbuss. You know, you end up with this shotgun type weapon, and the sound effects for it, I won't spoil it, are just hilarious.
Oh man, now you have me thinking of what it could be.
Yeah, well, it's not a challenging thing to think about because it's really not that complicated. It's just it's done so well. If you think in terms of musicality, you might you know be able to easily come up with something based on the shape, but to hear it in action is what makes it so great.
Nice. Yeah. So this is going to be $19.99, coming out later on this year ish. That's the plan right now. Obviously, things can change.
Depends on whose calendar.
It is available for pre-order now, and if you pre-order the game, you can get into the closed beta that's going on, or closed alpha, whatever they're calling it, but you could be a part of what Royal was able to be a part of and check the game out. Is this something that people should keep their eye on?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's, like I said, a lot of fun. It's very inventive. Good art style. If Cyanide and Happiness is your thing, I think it'll be right up your alley. I enjoyed it. It wasn't too bad for a Saturday afternoon, you know?
Nice.
Yeah. I'll be eager to see how it turns out longer term. I'm sure it'll be fun.
Nice. And you have access to it pretty much every weekend until they change their schedule. So if you dive into it a bit more, maybe we could do a follow up on this sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. When it goes from alpha to beta, for example, if you want, we could certainly go over what's changed. And I don't know. I mean, I definitely plan on playing it again. I had a bit of fun with it, and I hope I finally get my first kill.
I believe in you, like I said.
Maybe I need a new mouse.
Royal, it's always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Hells, bells, and shotgun shells.
You always have such good final words.
Thank you.
All right, moving on. Chris Taylor, you're here. How are you doing?
I am here.
How's it going?
It's going all right. Yes, how I'm doing, not what I'm doing.
Well, what are you doing?
I am here.
Oh, man. You poured a lot of time into Dragon Quest, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just did right before we started recording.
I need your opinion on something because I asked Tim this earlier in the show. I need your opinion as well.
Okay.
How bad is the music to you?
I actually think it's fine.
Do you?
Well, I don't like the battle music.
See, he liked the battle music. I think the whole soundtrack is fucking awful because of the sound quality.
Well, yeah, that's typically we get the MIDI version and Japan gets the orchestral version. It's so odd. Like even in the 3DS versions.
It's just, oh, man, I can't get over how bad the music is. It's just everything about the game looks beautiful and it has the classic sound effects that sound good. It's like they're trying to go with 16-bit music and it's not doing it for me. I'm having a hard time playing the game because of it.
I get it. I think that anything in Dragon Quest is, if it's doing its job, then it's equal parts majestic and derpy. Like, I think the same thing about the art style. I'm like, these backgrounds look so luscious, but these characters. But I mean, you know, I've always felt that way about most Dragon Quest, like, modern soundtracks, like, ever since they started doing MIDI stuff. But then I listened to the orchestral ones, which I believe you and I both have a copy of that two-disc symphonic suite.
Yes, it is incredible, and I wish that was in the game.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't do that. Like, I guess my thing is that I'm glad that I have both available to listen to, but I do wish that you could switch between them on the PS4 because it is on a Blu-ray. I mean, surely they have enough room.
They had to have room for all that.
Yeah, so get on it, Squaresoft. Also, send us some games.
hey, I tried getting 11 for the show and they just didn't have enough copies to go around. So,
come on, Squaresoft.
It just didn't pan out for us this time.
Square Enix.
Squeenix.
Squeenix, hey, come on, guys.
That said, you do have a bunch of games to talk about tonight.
I do. There are some actual games that I'm under actual obligation to explain about.
Ready to dive into them?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Haunted Dungeons Hayaki Castle, developed by Asakusa Studios, published by HappyNet, released August 30th on Switch and PS4 for $13.99. Storm the yokai-infested Hayaki Castle and defeat its ruler. Form your party, a group of secret agents from among four races, human, oni, tengu, and nekomata, or nikomata. Then conquer the terrifying and mysterious yokai-filled castle. Chris, with all these confusing names, please sort this out for me.
Yes, well, what we have here, and actually, I've been playing it, and I get hung up on the title, is Hayaki Castle, but it's Haunted Dungeon?
Dungeons, yes.
Haunted Dungeons, Hayaki Castle. Great, I got it.
So even you're confused with the name, and you're the one covering it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot of Edo era, like, Japanese references, basically. So the game itself is a first-person dungeon crawler that occurs in real time, which is really interesting. So I guess the best way to explain it would be like Might and Magic, like the classic Might and Magic, Dungeons and Dragons, or Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, Warriors of the Eternal Sun. It has dungeon sequences that are in real time like this, and Magic Dungeon on the NES, which is actually Dungeon Magic, sorry. It's one of the ones I like, even though I can't remember the title. So you're in first person, and you scooch along like a tile at a time, and enemies on the map are also able to scooch around a tile at a time, but if they spot you or they can reach you, they can just start attacking you, and there's no time to access a menu or anything like that. You're in action. So it's not quite something like a Skyrim or whatever, but it's also not like an Etrian Odyssey. So you don't really have a lot of time to formulate a strategy. All of that is done prior to the battle. So what you do is your special moves, like every kind of move that you can do, from healing to magic to like a regular attack to different, just various skills that you build upon in a skill tree system, much like Dragon Quest XI, what we were just talking about. You assign them to a hotkey on the controller, and then you just push that button when it's your character's turn, and then they go through a cooldown, and then you scroll to the next character with the shoulder button, use their move, and then scroll to the next character. And by the time you've reached the end of your four characters, you can scroll back around to the front and do the thing all over again. You have limited, of course, magic, which has to be healed at save points. You have, so therefore your skills are not infinite, but you can use regular attacks infinitely, and they have various effects that are affected by the job and presumably by the race, which we'll get to in a minute because that's my favorite part. So the thing that Hayaki Dungeon adds to this formula is a really interesting, like, okay, so I'm gonna let you know, I should have let you know in advance, this game's a little on the complex side. So I'm going to be doing a lot of talking.
All right.
Like a lot of uninterrupted talking. So
I will stand back and just enjoy the
show.
I've
been interrupted.
I'm sorry.
Just kidding. Okay, so the other element that they add in is that basically you can split your party into two groups of two, which you can decide which members of your party go into which team in the regular game menu. So you split your team, and more often than not, that's going to be required for doing most puzzles and defeating most enemies. So it's something you're going to have to get used to. So you push the L2 button and your screen splits, into two different things. In one, your original party that you've just branched from, and the other one is the party that you're actively using now. And you can switch between them dynamically at any point by just pressing the L2 button again. And with that, you can then keep two characters in front of the enemy and have two characters sneak behind the enemy and do some amazing attacks. And when the enemy turns around to attack your characters that are backstabbing him, then you can switch to your other party and backstab him from that side. And, you know, you can set up all kinds of things. Like, you can have one set of characters flanking the enemy from a distance, because they're distant moves, while the other enemy is while the other team is tanking in the front. Now, obviously, this sounds like it's a little frantic for something that's more or less an RPG. So, the game has another interesting system in place for the splitting, and that is that whatever character you're not currently controlling turns into stone in the game's lore. So your active party is going to be able to do things, but your inactive party is going to be nigh invincible, but still attracting the enemy's attention. So that's how you're able to split your characters off and then sneak behind the enemy without it, like, getting wise to this slow ass movement that you're doing to the back of it. So, in that sense, that allows you to basically not have to worry about the characters that you're not currently controlling. So then it really does become just like, you know, sneak around to the enemy, backstab them, and then when they turn around and face you, quickly switch to your other party and then backstab them, and you can get through most battles without taking much damage at all. But then, of course, they introduce things like magic and stuff and, like, certain other deals like that. And it, like I said, it gets complicated, but as you basically get through, like, the first floor of the dungeon, which, by the way, you can do as a tutorial, that's really handy, so I do recommend that. Then you actually get kind of used to it, and it becomes really fun. So I like that. The enemies are all classic, traditional, ancient, like, Japanese yokai. You'll see, if you're into playing, like, yokai-based games, which, I mean, I've reviewed, like, 10 of them so far, so clearly they have a fan base, you'll recognize some of these creatures. And they are creepy, especially when they're coming at you in, like, live, like, 3D, you know? Everything from skeleton ladies with, like, giant eyes to, like, women's heads that are being bounced upon one arm that are gigantic. Huge bug-eyed torso demons that have little people on top of them as well. Like, nice. There's all kinds of creepy nightmare fuel in this game, which is meant to be, because it is meant to be, like, pretty horrifying. However, to mitigate all of this, you get, you know, to create your dream team, which, like I said, you have four jobs to choose from. You can be basically a knight or a ninja, you know, more agility-based kind of thing. A monk, which is more kind of, what would you call them? Like, I know what they're called in Etrian Odyssey, but basically the defender type character, the one that can raise everybody's defense and take a whole bunch of damage and, you know, they punch with their fists. And then the last one is a kind of combination priest and mage. I think they're just called priests though in this game, but they give you your magic stuff. And then your races, you can be human, like I said, and then Tengu and Oni, which a Tengu is basically like a bird man with a long nose. If you see one, then you'll recognize it from, like, old Japanese things. But it's basically a kind of bird demon thing. And then an Oni is essentially a demon, which I believe the fourth portrait that you can choose is to be a kappa, which is pretty fun. But then the fourth one is the Nekumata, which is a cat person. And they appear to be around the size and dimensions of just an actual cat wearing a hat and, like, a kimono or something. Nice. So obviously for my game, I went with four Nekomatas, one for each job, and I named them all after Wilfred. So we have Manfred, Winifred, Alfred Chicken, and Wilfred.
Nice.
So that was my team taking down the people in the dungeon. And then, like I said, you know, it's lots of it's lots of like that live action sort of fighting and strategizing in real time. The other thing is that the dungeon crawling aspect of it is more action than exploration, because you actually can't afford to do too much exploring because you have a hunger meter that constantly goes down. And there's no consistent way to just get food. So you get food from enemies and you get food from treasure chests, but there are limited enemies and there are limited treasure chests. However, if you keep exploring, you keep getting hungry. So you do actually have to kind of move it along. So it's interesting because I think it's one of the few like action oriented, like old school dungeon crawlers that I've seen in this day and age.
Nice.
Yep.
So overall, $14. What do you think of it?
Well, $14. I mean, that I think it's definitely worth it. I mean, it's quality. Graphics look good. The music is nice. It feels like a full-fledged game, and it appears to have quite a lot of levels. So I think this will keep your dungeon crawling fan busy, and it has enough new things in it that I think you're going to find a pretty unique experience without it being too, you know, bogged down with complexity. Because, I mean, I was able to hang after, like, about half an hour to an hour, which is more than I can say for Might and Magic.
Yeah.
So, but if you're one that likes a more relaxed dungeon crawling experience, like, you know, what was the one I just did? Lost Child? Or was it? No, not Lost Child. I think it was called Lost Child. Anyway, whatever.
I don't remember.
If you're into the more classic dungeon crawlers, then this one's going to be a little intense. But I think that $14 is definitely worth it.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Broforce, developed by Free Lives, published by Devolver Digital, released September 6th on the Switch for $14.99. When evil threatens the world calls on Broforce, an underfunded, overpowered paramilitary organization dealing exclusively in excessive force. Brace your loins and eliminate the opposing terrorist forces that threaten our way of life. Chris, tell us about Broforce.
Oh, Broforce. This one, I mean, if you don't know what Broforce is by now, I mean, it seems to have been, like, basically, I guess you just haven't been to a party in, like, 3 years. Yeah, Broforce. So this is a modern day, what would you call it? Not a bestseller, a classic, not a, a thing. It's basically a phenomenon. Of modern, like, indie multiplayer type gaming. So the presentation, and oh, by the way, funny enough, this is going to be the second time in a row I've reviewed a game with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Commando, or from his role in Commando, and it's having done the Video Kid last time. But yes, yeah, so what it is basically a pixelated sort of 8-bit style, but way fast and furious and like over the top, lots of stuff happening. There's no possible way it could actually be an 8-bit game, but it's presented with 8-bit pixels. But it is an extreme action game where you play through small levels, just trying to get all those American flags raised throughout the thing and blowing up terrorists as one of a multitude of largely 80s, like, I don't know, would you say parody? I mean, they're kind of direct references to characters in action films from the zeitgeist of, like, the ultra macho, you know, super violent, like, kind of 80s broiness. But, so, you know, you've got, and of course they all have their names as puns. So you've got, like, Bromando and, you know, yeah. What was his name? Broland Walker or something like that. So it's Walker, Texas Ranger, essentially. To pretty obscure ones, like they've got the guys from Boondock Saints, the Boondock Bros. They've got Leon the Professional. just to prove, the adage correct that to be a bro does not require a gender, you also have three female characters. You have the Brode from Kill Bill. And what do they call the lady from Aliens? Like, I can't remember what they call her in the game. But yeah, you got like, oh, and the lady with the machine gun leg from that film that I didn't see.
Nice.
Yeah, she's actually one of my favorites because she can run by shooting the ground. So yeah, like you've got like 30 guys and like three ladies rampaging through, like, basically a kind of jingoist sort of Republican wet dream of guns and violence, and every other character on the screen is a terrorist. You raise American flags while blowing them all up, rescuing the captured POWs who are, you know, every few that you unlock, it unlocks a new character. And basically every time that you, even if you already have the character, every time you save somebody, it gives you an extra life. So it's good because every single level you start with one life. So you're going to want to be rescuing those guys. And, like I said, it moves super fast. You can move up walls. You can shoot through the ground if you want to. Like, it's kind of a sky's the limit on, like, things that you can do in the game. And then, of course, at the end of every level, there's a devil in a business suit for some reason. I guess that's the ultimate evil. And you kill him, raise the American flag, and then each and every time you get a chopper comes down and you grab the ladder, and then it like peels away while like wild metal guitars start playing and stuff.
Nice.
And then of course you liberate areas and it shows the American flag and all this other stuff. So it's fantastic like that. And probably the coolest thing about this one, and again, people who are playing this on the Switch should take note that, especially since if you're taking this on the go or whatever, is that it has up to four players on the screen at any time, so you can actually go through the adventure with four people blasting in the sheer chaos that is this game. And I would say that that's probably the ideal way to play it. It's a fantastic multiplayer game. And on the Switch version, of course, they have online mode, so you can join games or have your game joined by random strangers, which is cool because everybody pretty much plays this game the same way. That is to say, they blow up everything and then die instantly.
Nice.
And then the one person that's good will actually get to the end of the level.
Oh, boy.
Which simulates every party that I've been to since, I don't know, 2014 when this game first came out. It's been out for a while. Yeah. So yeah, Broforce.
Nice. So $15 on it. What do you think of it?
Well, 15, like, it's been out for a while, so I don't know what the price is on other systems, but I mean, 15 is fair, I would say, especially if you've got couch co-op people, you know, on call to be able to play this, because the one player game is good, but the four player game is fantastic. This is definitely a great multiplayer game. And in fact, I would recommend just getting it just to, on the off chance that you have people over and they're scrolling through your games. And they're like, oh, well, we could play Broforce. I'm like, yeah, of course.
Nice.
Because game is super simple. It's only got three buttons, basically. And the whole point is to not get yourself exploded. And if you do get yourself exploded, it's fine. You have free lives.
Yay.
Yay.
And I can confirm the game is $15 on PS4 and Steam.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Same price all around.
On Switch, you got that portable multiplayer element, so I'd say this is the best deal.
Plus, it's on the Switch, so...
Yeah, it's on Switch. Get it.
I mean, Switch stuff is always good.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. Next game to talk about is called Full Blast, developed by UFO Crash Games, published by Rattleaka Games, released September 4th on PS4 and Vita, the 5th on Xbox One, the 7th on the Switch for $5.99 on all platforms. Try to take in as much as you can when you have the time, though. Being a shmup, it's not just an alien menace you have to worry about, but they're projectiles you'll need to dodge if you hope to survive. Chris, what is Full Blast?
That's an awkward translation. Actually, the game has some pretty great translation foibles in it, so that already recommends it for me. Because I love shmup language. I mean, it's the genre that brought us Take Off Every Zig. And, you know, the other more infamous phrases. So, yeah, Full Blast. This is a... Okay, so it actually draws its inspiration from a lot of places, but all good places. So I'll try and list them off as best I can. I would describe this as possibly, like I've described before, that there's such thing as a European shmup versus a Japanese shmup, a Danmaku. So a Japanese style one will be more bullet hell. So like the screen just fills up with bullets and like everything, you know, the bullets aren't particularly fast. You just got to get like in between there and those little pockets of air. And, you know, things get intimidating, you throw a bomb or whatever. European ones are a little harder. They're a little slower overall. You know, you're usually only given like one life or whatever. And, you know, you maybe can take multiple hits. They play a little bit differently. And this one's on the more European side. It moves a little slow. And interestingly, the camera angle, unique, it's a little bit unique, but also reminds me exactly of a game called Nanostray back on the DS, which was one of the very few shoot 'em ups that were available on the 3D, or sorry, on the regular DS. The 3DS actually had way more. But it essentially would be, so it's looking down a kind of almost an isometric vertical plane. Think like a pinball table.
Mm-hmm.
How it's wide at the bottom and a little narrower at top. So the enemies are coming at you and you can kind of see them from that angle. You know, it's they're traveling along that plane in that thing. Your shots are kind of are going out there, so they're kind of triangulating towards the center of the screen at the top. However, the actual playing field is like that, but the screen is a perfect rectangle. So you find yourself not able to actually reach every corner of the screen with bullets, which is an interesting thing. Now, I've beaten Nanostray, and I really enjoyed it, so I'm used to this, but this might be a little shocking to some vertical shoot 'em up fans, so fair warning there. So there's not a whole ton of bullets that come at you at any point, and in fact, power-ups, like, you know, if this were a Japanese shoot 'em up, I would be expecting, like, filling up the screen with, like, spread shot, like, you know, insanity. But this one, you have a little bit more of a conservative, like, system that actually reminded me a lot of Darius. So you have your single shot that you start with, you get it up to double shot, triple shot, and then four shot, and then four shot with heat-seeking missiles. Which is really, that works really well for the levels presented, but, you know, it's not a huge flashy thing like one might expect. So, and then there, of course, there's a spread shot that gets more powerful as well, but those drops were super rare, and if you get a spread shot while you're working on your straight shot, then it resets. So you can't go switching between the two shot types, so you actually end up dodging some power-ups. If they look like they're going to make you do the spread shot.
Nice.
Yeah. And the enemies are all fashioned after various fish and bugs. So that's very Darius-like, I noticed. So it's, to me, felt like kind of a Darius by way of Nanostray. But both of those are great games, so that's not a complaint. So the other thing about it is that typically in these games, power-ups are, you know, constant. You know, you get score multipliers all the time. And of course, you know, every so many points or, you know, once a level, twice a level, you know, maybe once or twice after a boss, you get like bombs. Of course, the bombs in this game are a screen clearing type of explosion that'll get your, you know, get your bacon out of the frying pan when it comes to getting overwhelmed with bullets, which actually will happen from time to time. But this game, actually, I would go three or four levels before I would ever get a bomb, and you don't get any if you die. You get three lives, and, you know, in those three lives, you are given one bomb to start, and then the rest you have to find.
And yeah, it's not very bomb-heavy with the game.
Right? I felt like I was getting cheated on my bombs. However, I really feel like it's just a matter of playing this game based on its own sort of thing, because there are so many things I like about this game. For one, I really like how you don't have to ever start the game over. Like, if you get a game over, you just start on the stage that you died in. And in fact, as you unlock levels, you can go back and revisit them anytime. each level that's unlocked just shows up on the screen and you just select, you know, the one that you want to play. And if it's the one that you've most recently died on, then just go to that one and, you know, start right over, which is good because the levels are freaking long. Did you notice that?
Yeah, they are.
They're like 10 to 15 minutes long each, I want to say. Maybe less, but it felt like a lot, especially because there are a lot of levels and like each sort of background is assigned four stages. So you go through four stages of going through the same looking city, cityscape until you get to like the more kind of wildernessy sort of, you know, second block of stages and then a third block of stages in the ocean and, you know, so forth, so on and so forth. But I mean, as long as the scenery changes at some point, I'm happy because, you know, these are all based on games that used to just have a black background. But yeah, like I was ill prepared for how meaty this game is, like in terms of like how long levels are, how long it takes to, you know, defeat bosses.
Especially for the price.
Yeah. Like I was kind of surprised at how cheap this game is versus what you get out of it. So, I mean, that's a little bit telling of my conclusive review, I think.
So for $6, what is your conclusive review?
Yeah, $6, pick this one up. If you like shoot 'em ups, it's probably going to end up in your library sooner or later. Just because it's a cheap shmup, and like those are hard to come by sometimes. It's literally cheaper than like arcade conversions or, you know, other indie games. I have no idea why it's this cheap. It's actually quite good. I think, you know, it might feel a little generic at times, especially the soundtrack. It's this very butt rock sort of metal with no, in the stages I played, I really didn't detect any discernible melodies. They're just kind of chuggy guitar chords and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, I'm super critical on those, being a soundtrack guy. However, it gets the job done. And that's I think what ultimately this game is. It gets the job done and it's worth more than $6. So you should pick it up if you're looking for another shmup to like, you know, sink some time into, but without that kind of bullet hell, you know, pressure.
Yeah. I also want to point out for people who are into trophies and achievements, this fairly easy completion. You can get, I got 1,000 out of 1,000 achievements in the game, probably in under a half hour.
Yeah, I got 12 trophies. I don't know how many I got ultimately, but it looked like all the rest of them were really easy to get.
Yeah, it's a pretty, pretty easy game to, if you're enjoying Platinums on the PS4 and Vita, it is a cross-buy game. So there's two Platinums for $6.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Trophy hunters, beware.
Indeed.
Or be aware.
Be aware, yes.
I don't want to say beware. We're trying to sell this thing.
Indeed. anyway, one final game to talk about tonight is called Arcade Archives Kids Hore Hore Daisakusen. Hopefully I said it right, because that's a hell of a name. developed and published by Hamster, released August 9th on the Switch for $7.99. Kid who has been drawn into the space-time labyrinth from the 23rd century fights to escape from a large track of their enemy in order to return to present day. Which one is the 23rd century? Go through the primitive age, Edo period, and other epics. This is an action game that was released from Nichibutsu in 1987. Chris, what is this game?
What is it indeed? Well, first off, shout outs to Nichibutsu, because that's they're the ones who made Crazy Climber. And this is a game I mentioned when I was talking about Crazy Climber.
Did you?
Yeah, because this is the game that had a planned U.S. release where they were going to call it Booby Kids.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this is Booby Kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, obviously, Booby stands for Booby Trap. I don't know what you were thinking when you heard me say Booby Kid.
Oh, nothing at all.
Yeah, exactly. And Booby Trap, obvious. But yeah, or Booby Boy, which is what this ended up being on the Game Boy. Although I believe they still retained, I think they actually did use that title in Japan, but this game stayed in Japan along with its Game Boy counterpart. So don't go looking on the shelves for Booby Kids. This is a certain style of game that for some reason was really popular around the late 80s. It's a formula that I was probably made most popular by like Heianchio Alien or whatever it was called, and The Adventures of Boomer and Asmic World, another Game Boy game. Basically, the main brunt of the gameplay is that you're wandering around a maze looking for items, treasure chests specifically, and as enemies come at you, what you're supposed to do is dig a hole in the ground, and then they fall into the hole, and then you bury them. I swear to God, that's actually like 12 games that have that exact formula, and I have no idea why, because it's ridiculous.
And like, but the only one that I recognize there is the Heianchio Alien.
Yeah, well, it is like that. You dig a hole, the enemy gets into it, you bury them, and then you move on. Trying to find the rest of those treasure chests. If you find all the treasure chests, it gives you a key. Key unlocks a door. Door takes you to the next level. Repeat 21 times or more, because the game just loops. But, yeah, so what it... But this game versus the others actually has a whole lot more going for it, which is nice. You don't only dig holes. That's just your main thing. And you get power-ups that let you dig, like, holes on, like, all the, like, line in front of you. So, like, you know, four to... Like, some of them only do two, so you can dig two holes at a time and, you know, bury two enemies. Which, by the way, gives you bonus points, because this is an old arcade game, so what you're doing is playing for score. Or, you know, you can dig, like, a whole row and then, you know, bury a whole bunch of enemies if you can get them... over there. Of course, one hit kills you, and there's no way really to dodge the enemies apart from just running away from them and going elsewhere in the maze, and your own holes can trap you if you don't have them at least partially covered. So it becomes a kind of Bomberman style challenge where, you know, you're trying to trap the enemy without trapping yourself, and, you know, trying to get all around the maze to get all the things that you need to get to the end. So the other power-ups that you get, however, are really cool things, like a yo-yo that kills enemies instantly within three spaces in front of you, two spaces, something like that. Then you get like an ice gun, which turns them into blocks of ice that you can then push and break apart, or a flamethrower, which it also instantly kills them, which immediately made me think of Spaceballs. The kids love it. Spaceballs, the flamethrower. Anyways, so despite
that movie,
I know it's so good. I just watched it recently too. Anyway, so despite the game's like really childish appearance and like it's kind of, you know, generally goofy, it's kind of dark because anytime that you bury enemies, a little cross comes out of the ground with their skull on top of it that floats away.
Oh God!
Or when you like shoot them with a flamethrower, like. It turns them into a skull and like things like that. It's pretty interesting. And yeah, as far as the layout of the levels, they're all, of course, that really absurd style that, you know, that Japanese arcade games from the 80s tended to favor. And in this one, of course, you're time traveling. So you start off, you know, burying cavemen, and you eventually get to like modern day military looking kind of guys, like kind of World War II era. You know, there's an ancient feudal Japan level, which actually has a really good stage tune that I quite like. And then, you know, like you're trying to get back to the future. And so, of course, the future is future-y. And, you know, in every level, of course, there's the same alien people who try to run you down, who all have human skulls in their heads for some reason. Because the game does not differentiate. If a blob is following you and you bury it, it turns into a human skull. I don't know. But yeah, it's basically, you know, and there's just different ways of like, you know, utilizing the power-ups and the levels, kind of like finding the little surprises and ultimately, you know, getting rid of these waves upon waves of enemies, because there's no set amount of enemies. They just keep respawning until you get out of the level. And in fact, you know, because you're playing for score, they decided to put a timer in it so that so you don't just sit there grinding out points. So that's kind of where the challenge is in increasing your score, is like defeating as many enemies as you can and getting as many power-ups and you know, points as possible before the time runs out. Or if you're just playing this game to survive, which you can do, then that's, you know, just a matter of finding those treasure chests, getting the key, and getting the door.
Nice.
Yep.
So overall, $8. What do you think on this one?
I think they could have got $10 if they would have just called it Booby Kid. For $8, this is another great hamster arcade release. And it's, again, it's from, you know, Nichi Butsu. So it's a little piece of old, you know, Japanese arcade, like, history. Definitely worth playing, especially if you get that vertical controller holder that's coming out soon. You know, the one that they kickstarted like a couple months ago.
Yeah, I can't wait for those to start shipping.
Yeah, because this is definitely one of those games that is meant to be played in vertical mode, because it's going to be, the way it normally plays is going to be as a third of your screen.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but it's really fun and I really like it, so go get it.
Sounds good. Chris, always good having you on. That is the end of this episode. Thanks to everyone else for coming on and doing their reviews.
Yeah.
Music this episode, because I saw them at Mag Labs, is going to be Viking Guitar Live, because I want people's faces to be rocked off.
Viking Guitar Live's great.
Oh, it was such a good show, too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but that is it for this episode. Chris, do you have any final words to end it?
Booby Kids.
I was hoping for May the Schwartz be with you.
Oh, yeah.
May the Schwartz be with you.